Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So hello and welcome to yet another Charlton Live lockdown podcast. My name is Louis Mendez and we've got a packed phone line for you guys this afternoon as we get ready to talk about a few things that have happened this week and of course look back at last year's playoff semi-finals because we're at the 1 year anniversary of those games. So without any further ado, let's bring in those who are on the phone. First up in line one, Lewis Cat. How you doing, Lou?
Yeah, good mate. You okay?
Yeah, not bad. Have you had a good week?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Yeah. Getting a bit bored sitting indoors now, must say.
I think that's the same for all of us. Another man who's bored of sitting indoors, but did have the entertainment factor of seeing my haircut this week. Benji Cloak, how you doing, Ben?
Yeah, that's very good, Louis.
Yeah, what did you think of my haircut that I gave myself?
Yeah, not bad, actually. Mm. It was quite good, I must say.
Yeah, Ben only saw the front.
Yeah. And I must say, I'm buzzing from winning the mug competition.
Oh, yeah. So. Ben also correctly guessed the name of the club from its mug game this week, although it was Charlton, so it's quite an easy one today. Finally, before I tell you more about my haircut, let's bring in Terry Smith. How are you doing, Tel?
I'm all right.
So I bought myself some clippers. Did this, like, the side bits are quite easy. It turns out doing round the ears and round the back is quite hard. So whereas it from the front, my haircut's all business. From the back, it looks like, I don't know, Chernobyl.
Can I give the listeners a piece of advice as well? If you are in lockdown, as I am, as we all are, obviously, and you think you haven't got your hair clippers, I did have and threw them away because I thought, when am I ever going to need those? I was given. It's like a beard trimmer. It's like a small mini shaver, if you like. Mm. The settings on the mini shaver aren't the same as the settings on the normal hair clippers. So when you think you're using a number 9 and this will stay quite long, it doesn't. Just so I've put that out there. Yeah, you do end up looking like a criminal.
Yeah, Terry looking a bit like former stadium announcer Dave Lockwood at the moment, I imagine.
Yeah, not far wrong.
Yeah, right, let's... So on this week's pod, and I did promise at the end of last week's show that we will talk about, of course, the anniversary of the playoff semi-finals, you know, two of the best games we've had... In recent times, last season, the 1 year anniversary. So we will come on to that in the second part of the show. We'll listen back to the highlights as well. We'll really take that stroll down memory lane and relive some of the most exciting contests, especially that second leg that we've seen for a long time. But obviously, as is the state of play at Charlton this week, there's been a few things that need talking about. You know, we've heard from Lyle Taylor this week. He spoke to an online podcast. We heard, of course, from Marion Mihail, the director who answers the questions from the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust. And we've heard from Matt Southall this week, as is often the case. He's taken to social media to make some threats and to claim he's got information which he, for some reason, hasn't published. Because if I had information that cleared my name, I'd probably go out there and publish it rather than just saying I do and not doing it. Because it's a very strange course of affairs. But let's have a little chat about what we've seen so far this week. So we'll come on to the Lyle Taylor stuff in a bit, Lewis. But I mean, I do want to talk about Matt Southall. Has come out this week and, well, threatened the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust, threatened to take action against them for doing interviews with people. And now Marion Mihail, obviously the Trust asks these questions of him every week. It's frustrating that sometimes, you know, you wish Marion would be able to come out and say, oh no, he's definitely got loads of money, but he can't prove that because clearly that hasn't happened yet and I'll be surprised if it ever does happen. As is the fact of this matter, both sides in this situation have been using any channel they can to slag each other off, and there's been a bit of that towards Matt Southall from Marion in this exchange that we're seeing, the Q&A with the Trust. And Matt Southall's making some sort of threat to go on and sue the Trust because of that. Matt seemingly showing very little understanding of the law, basically. I mean, what have you made of it, Lewis?
I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. Again, I mean, I don't know why I was so sort of, I don't know, I felt a bit shocked when I saw it yesterday, but I was thinking, I don't really understand why I do feel shocked, because I just feel like Matt's just going to stoop to any low possible to try and make himself look like the good guy. And it's just using a football club for purposes of boosting your own ego, which either party could be doing, because we haven't seen a huge amount of promise from Tanoon's side either. It is completely wrong. You know, it's all right for them because they're not the people that support the club. They're not the people that, if this goes belly up, are going to lose their like one of some people's only constant that they've got. You know, people, you spend every Saturday going to support your football club, and there's a real risk of that not being a possibility if this isn't sorted. And that's the bottom line. I don't care about Matt Southall's, you know, if anything's been said bad about him, because then bad things have been said about Tanoon as well, and it's just this back and forth. But ultimately the club isn't getting any better in terms of trying to move on from this or prove that Tanoon has got the funds and the backing, and that this is all going to be all right. But at the moment there's no light at the end of the tunnel whatsoever, and seeing stupid things on Twitter about suing the trust and things like that, like, what is the point? Like, what does he get out of that? I don't understand at all. I think it's just another low, just dangling the carrot again, trying to wind up Charlton fans on social media just to give himself a little bit of an ego boost. The other bloke that keeps commenting on there, I've never heard of him before, whatever his name is, Ads or Jads, I don't even know what his name is, another irrelevant person in this entire thing. Ultimately, they're all irrelevant, because the most important thing in all of this is our football club, and ultimately at the moment it's looking a pretty bleak future for us at the moment, and I've got real concerns that we're not going to have a club to follow anymore if this doesn't get sorted out properly and in a mature manner.
Because one of the more confusing things about this, Ben, is like there seems to be an assumption from Matt Southall's side that everyone's on the side of Tanoon Namir and just waiting for Matt to go away, so it's all golden. I mean, it's been quite clear. I mean, the attack on the trust is bizarre, because it's been clear to me that the trust have been asking a lot of questions of Tanoon Namir. It's not like the trust are blowing the trumpet for Tanoon Namir. He's currently the one who we need to put money into the club, and they've asked a lot of probing questions about that. I don't understand why Matt and some people seem to be of the opinion that it's all one-sided, because clearly the trust are asking questions of Tanoon Namir every week.
Yeah, spot on. I think reading the questions that the trust asked Marion Mahale this week, I mean, there's one question that is regarding Matt Southall, asking why does Matt Southall need removing before investment?
Exactly, and that's a question against Tanoon Namir. It's saying, why are you using Matt Southall as an excuse? So it's not like they're trying to put pressure on Southall. The trust have been putting pressure on Tanoon Namir via, you know, Marion Mihail this over the last few weeks. That's why I don't understand why people are implying that the trust are trying to side with Tanoon Namir, when it's clear that they're asking questions of him every week.
Yeah, spot on. I think that the ultimatum is that clearly Southall isn't bothered about the club anymore. He's just trying to save his own name. I think if he was bothered about the club, he'd keep quiet and try and sort stuff in the background and, worry about the sufficiency of the funds. And that's really where the trust are trying to get to. They're trying to say, look, if no money comes in from Tanoon, where are we at? Are we going to be able to pay the players? Are we going to be able to pay the staff, the creditors, all that kind of stuff? Because that's the main thing. I think now as supporters, we're in a, look, best case scenario. I mean, we don't know what the best case scenario is, because we've been told this guy's going to put money in Tanoon for a while now. It still hasn't happened. We kind of, realistically, we kind of forgotten about Southall now, because as I said, it's clear he's not really bothered about the club anymore. We've got him chirping in the background, but we're not siding with Tanoon, we're not siding with Southall. We just want, as Lewis just said, the club to be sorted out. And that's where the questions, as the trust are aiming it at these guys, Marion Mihail, Claudio Farica, and Tanoon, to kind of say, look, we're in the middle of May now and we still haven't had these funds. We still haven't found out where these funds are coming from so the EFL can ratify it. We've still got this embargo hanging over us. This is the crux of the matter that needs to be sorted.
Yeah. Terry, I don't know. Maybe a personal opinion here, but I think it's really disappointing to see the divide and conquer tactics being deployed by Matt Southall with his some of his sort of half leaks, which are strange. So I think in his letter to the trust, he implied that he gave them loads of evidence that Tanoom was a bad person that you didn't share with the fans. It's clear that if Matt Southall believed that he had evidence that people need to see, I mean, he has his own channels that he can put his own name to it. You know, when Marion Mihail slags off Matt Southall, I mean, I still think it's a complete waste of time, but he's putting his name to it. He's not expecting the trust to do his dirty work for him. He's saying, these are my words. When Matt Southall comes out and says, I've given you loads of evidence that you haven't shared, I mean, if Matt Southall has this evidence that clears himself, why doesn't he just go out and share it? I mean, it's quite clear what he's trying to just make people think, you know, lose faith in the trust without actually providing any evidence himself or taking the risk that would, you know, an accusation like the sort of thing he wants to, he might want to put on Tanoom Namir, put that sort of information out there. He's not willing to take that risk because he knows there's legal consequences to it, but at the same time he's trying to use that as some sort of spanner to throw into the work and to make people not trust the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust, which is incredibly stupid and hugely frustrating to see people fall for it.
There's a few issues here. I mean, it's like a victim mentality, I suppose, if you like, whereby you're trying desperately when you see things, I guess, crumbling around you, that you try and lash out at anybody and everybody, and it's almost like a case of, I'm not that bad because they're much worse. It's a strange situation to be in. I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like a huge Haribo advert where you look at these people and they all look like adults, but as soon as they open their mouths, they sound like four-year-olds. And that's pretty much where we are. You know, these people don't seem to be able to have adult conversations and proper conversations. And you're right, if Southall had any genuine evidence to clear his name, then it would have been in the courts now. We wouldn't be dragging it through Twitter or Instagram or any of that stuff. He'd be in court now saying, right, take him to court, I've got this, and that's it, end of story. But it's not happening because he's almost like he's trying to get the fans, you know, in a sort of last desperate attempt to justify himself. He's trying to get the fans at each other's throat. And, you know, the whole them and us situation, I sort of understand it because, you know, fans are desperate, especially Charlton fans, they're desperate for knowledge of what's going on in our club. All this, you know, circus show that's going on, we're just desperate. We're clutching at straws. We're doing anything we can to try and get some good news or any news at all. You know, genuine news, not the sort of nonsense we've been getting. And so you're going to get people who don't necessarily think the trust is for them. I understand that. You know, some people say, well, it doesn't really suit me. You know, a lot of people see the trust maybe as a room full of geeks, and and that may or may not be true. But you know, we're Charlton fans, and you know, if some fans don't particularly want to be involved in the trust, they want to start their own little group or big group, then fine, I've got no problem with that particularly. But what we've really got to make sure we do is not believe everything we hear on one side or the other, because all we really want is the same thing, and that's for Charlton to go forward. Mm. So, I mean, I remember. I don't know who said it or where it came from necessarily. It might have been Churchill, actually, where he said, you know, your enemy, if my enemy is your enemy, then you're my friend. You know what I mean? We've all got the same enemies here. And so ultimately, even if it's only for a short term or even if it's a bit unpalatable, you've got to be my friend for a while.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got the same enemy in mind.
Yeah. And that's why it is so frustrating to see people getting little snippets, you know. Clearly, Matt Southall's putting out little snippets. I mean, even now he's saying, I've got this document that proves I'm innocent, but I'm not going to show it because, I mean, he knows the legalities around that. But then trying to blame the trust, trying to imply the trust have withheld information when, you know, it's not up to the trust to go out and make accusations on behalf of one person in their own name. If people want to do interviews and say stuff on the record, that's up to them. But Matt Southall has his own Twitter page. If he had something that cleared his name 3 months ago, why didn't he put it out? Why is it up to the trust to put that out for him? You know, he's trying to use smoke and mirrors to turn people against the trust who are asking questions of Tanu Namir and Matt Southall. The fact that the trust have become stronger out of this shows that the majority of people aren't going to fall for it. But you've got to be careful, because in some cases he has. I mean, I said, Lewis, we saw last night in particular, there was a recruitment drive by the trust because, I mean, they were targeted by Matt Southall. They responded very well, you know, basically saying that you know, Matt Southall's got no chance of trying to sue the trust for publishing an interview. And we saw that, in a good way, a lot of fans are getting behind the trust.
Yeah, exactly. And it's support that the trust deserves. You know, they do fantastic things for this football club. They've been, I know it's, as Terry said there, we're sort of clutching at straws on answers, but they have been that constant, with pressing questions over to Marion Michal and getting some kind of dialogue out of the club, whether people think that that's enough or not. I mean, arguably, we're not getting a huge amount of info out of it, but it's still something.
And this is one of those cases where, I mean, again, people are upset with the answers. Unfortunately, the trust can ask the questions. It's not up to the trust to answer truthfully. Unfortunately, it's up to the people in charge, you know, and that's why the majority of people, I imagine, still have absolutely zero faith in Tanu Namir as well, because they're not getting clear answers. That doesn't mean that the questions the trust are answering are wrong. And that's why, by allowing yourself to believe the trust have become wrong because Matt Southall's saying that, you're just weakening our only hand at the moment, which is the trust asking strong questions of Tanu Namir as well.
Well, exactly. And those questions the trust are asking are from supporters anyway. People, you know, they've reached out to supporters to email questions in that they will put forward to Marion Michal. They're not taking it, you know, they're not, like you say, they're not making these questions up themselves. So these are questions coming from a wide range of different Charlton fans that want to know different things. So I think that it's typical Southall to drop it on the trust like that and try, and like I say, drop in a bit of a carrot down, see who nibbles at it and see if anybody, just to try and turn people against people, like you say, and try and make himself feel a bit bigger. But, you know, I signed up to the trust at the beginning of April, and I saw yesterday that a lot of people followed suit to prove that, you know, we're all on one side, and all we care about is our football club. I don't care about a little squabble between a businessman in Abu Dhabi and a chancellor up in Bury. I don't really care about that. But what I do care about is the future of my football club, because it doesn't just affect me; it affects the majority of the people close to me as well. And ultimately, the only thing I want is for us to come out the other side of this. Whether they're involved or whether Tanu's involved, Matt's involved, whoever, I think is impossible. But whoever's involved, as long as I have a club to support, I don't really care. And as long as it's looked after.
Yeah, because this argument between the people involved in ASI is tiresome. But, I mean, as far as I see, I mean, I've always seen them as one package, really. You know, I know they're arguing amongst themselves, really, but currently they're the package that own the club. And it's not looking good for the future of the club, if we're being totally honest. I mean, Ben, some of the questions, there were some question marks over, you know, from the trust about obviously Claudio Florica and Marion Michal this week. Very, very little information's come out of that about what they're here to do. I mean, the only thing I can hope they're here to do is to just get on with moving the club into stronger hands. Currently, we still haven't had the source and sufficiency or the funds proved to the EFL. That is the outstanding issue. That's the thing that whenever we talk about the current issue at the club that we really should be concentrating on, because that's the main problem at the moment. We're still under an embargo because of that. Tanoon is still yet to inject any funding into the club. I mean, when we get to the end of the month and it comes to payday again, that'll be interesting to see where that goes. They're the main issues at the club at the moment.
Yeah, I think I was just looking at question 8, where it says, can you explain the strategy for player recruitment this summer, given we will lose 16 players from the current squad? I mean, God, how scary is that? I know, as we're going to go on to talk about, we had Lyle Taylor come out and make some comments this week on a podcast. And yeah, just scary listening to that, because you think, blimey, I think it'll be the last time we see Lyle play for the club anymore. And I can't blame him because of all the everything that's happening at the club at the moment. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, I feel for Lee Bowyer, Steve Gallen, I mean, they're in the background with the whole coronavirus thing going on. They've got the, all of this with the ownership at the moment. I mean, how are they going to be able to promise the players new contracts or out of contracts? Gallen trying to work his magic to try and get some loans in for next season. I mean, it's all just a mess. And as you say, yeah, but if we're in the middle of May now and Tanoon still hasn't proved his source of sufficiency of funds, it's just getting silly now, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's so frustrating. I mean, the question, why has it taken 5 months for Tanoon Nimir to show his proof of funds? That was asked Terry. The EFL will conduct this investigation on documents submitted by April the 24th by the individuals involved. The club's lawyers have submitted a series of documents independent from the individual submission in an effort to keep the possible sanctions to the club to a minimum. And obviously, I mean, there's no clear answer there, basically. EFL latest documents were submitted to the EFL by Tanoon Nimir on May the 1st, apparently. We're awaiting final feedback, but there's no answer as to why this hasn't been done in the entire time. And that's infuriating.
Yeah, I mean, you start wondering, don't you? You start asking yourself questions about, well, you know, how hard can it be? And then you think, well, you know, has he written on the back of a bit of toilet paper, yes, I've got 50 million, thanks very much. And then you're surprised at the EFL said, well, actually, that's not enough. And then you show a bank account and they say, well, okay, you've got the money in there, but where'd it come from? And you go, oh, what did I need there? Well, it's come from me. Yeah, well, that's not enough. So you do wonder why it's taken so long, and you know, how hard can it be to understand the question? And you know, you're hoping it's not the EFL not understanding or just dragging their heels, but you get the feeling it's not. You get the feeling it's just they haven't provided the information that was requested, and you just don't get it. And the longer it carries on, the less convinced all fans are that it's actually there in the first place. So, the one thing that was telling, I think, for me on that question and answers was the fact that he said that, we'll put money in just enough to pay the players and creditors and staff towards the end of the month. Well, that's one thing. But then in the next place, he says, well, we've sort of suggested we'll give funds to the management team. They've identified some players we need, but a lot will depend on what division we're in. We're not being funny. If we do get back to playing and play the last nine games, if we haven't got 16 of those players that Benji was saying are going to leave, who are pretty much our main squad, those 16 players, we know what division we're going to be in, because if we're putting the kids out for the last nine games of the season, if it doesn't kick off until July, then there's only one division we're going to end up in, and that's the one below us, not the one we're in.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, unless they can put funds in prior, or at least persuade the players that are still here that they can stay for another couple of months and extend their contracts, and they'll have to make a decent sweetener, I suspect, then we're not going to be in this division.
Yeah, I mean, how viable that would be for any club in terms of extending contracts. And I mean, I'll be shocked if a player like Lyle Taylor, who we're about to talk about, who knows he won't be here next season, whatever ends up being next season, why on earth would he want to help out an ownership that have screwed him around? And I mean, the ins and outs of how that's going to work in terms of the football side for every club, let alone our club, is going to be hard to work out at this moment in time for the foreseeable future. But it is, it's baffling. And, you know, we're being distracted and divided by idiots on both sides of this conversation, unfortunately. But the crux of it is, you know, we still haven't got our source and sufficiency from Tanoon Nimir. We're in big trouble. So let's talk about this thing with Lyle Taylor then, Lewis. See, there was an interview going around on The Conversation, like a YouTube podcast sort of thing. It's got one of the lads from the Mirror newspaper, Darren Lewis, and it's got a few other people involved. And obviously, Lyle Taylor went on there and spoke quite a bit about about his contract situation. Now, we know, you know, he was linked heavily to that move to Brentford earlier on in the season, and we know he wanted to go. I think he made it quite clear at the time he wanted to go because football is football these days, Lewis. I mean, I've always said with someone like Lyle, as long as he's here and he gives 100%, then I won't complain too much. And when the move didn't happen, he went on and was one of our best players again and scored a hat full of goals. So I have no real complaints about the fact he wanted to go to somewhere where he'll get more money, because obviously we're not a club that offers that much money and it's a short career. So to then find out about how it all played out with Roland turning down the bid, eventually not offering him a great contract. I think he offered him only the 50% increase that he had for promotion, and no greater improved contract on top of that. And then Southall coming in, and then I think he then said Roland offered another contract that was higher, but then he started the season well, so he didn't accept it. And then when ESI came in, they offered him a lower contract. And then withdrew it, and I don't think Lyle Taylor was happy with how that was played out in public. I mean, it shows how frustrating it must be for a player to be working within the mess that is our football club over the last few years as well.
Definitely. And, as you say there, with Lyle, I wouldn't have blamed him at all if he had gone. It would have been frustrating, obviously, because he's a very important player. He proved it throughout the season. Obviously, he had that injury when he went away with Munster out, and we obviously didn't have him around for quite a long time. But the games that he did play, he made a difference. And in some crucial games like Luton and things like that, he made a real difference. And he was worth his weight in gold, really, because that's the sort of player that is the difference between keeping you in the division and you dropping back down again. And I was very surprised, because obviously when this all came out, we didn't really know the truth behind what Southall was going to be like. We were sort of singing his praises and everything. So I think people kind of made Lyle out to be the bad guy. And now obviously this has all gone, it's blown up the way it has. It was quite interesting for Lyle to come out and explain the situation as a whole. And now it's not surprising whatsoever when you look at it, at the way it was handled by Southall. And you know what? I wouldn't blame any of those players if they wanted to move on after this, because as you say, it's their career, it's their job, and you're a long time retired in football, and the decisions that they make going forward, if you know they want to get a move somewhere else, improve the money and play at a higher level, or just even with a bit more stability, then they're going to do that, because it's a short career and you're a long time retired. So Lyle Taylor's obviously at an age now where he's probably come into like the prime of his career towards the end of it. You know, he's 30 now, so he's going to want to get that one last big sort of big money move to set him up afterwards. And I wouldn't blame him for that. And as you say, he was ever the professional, regardless of what went on behind the scenes with all this. So all we can do is sort of wish him well if he does go. Like you say, it's very, very, very unlikely that we keep him unless a miracle happens over the next couple of months, which I can't see. So all we can do is thank him for what he has done, because his goals got us out of the division, and his goals ultimately probably could have kept us in the division if this played out. But yeah, I'll be really gutted to see him go. And it's someone, he came out obviously and gave the fans the brutal Lyle Taylor honesty. And I think that's something that we probably needed at the moment, because we're just getting everyone's just sort of tiptoeing around the actual facts, where Lyle goes straight for the jugular. And I think that's what we needed.
Yeah, I was going to say, Benji, it is refreshing to, because you don't get it too often with footballers. I mean, you do get it with Lyle. Every time he speaks, he certainly says what's on his mind. I also think the fact that he's come out and said this sort of stuff now proves, I think he's clearly given up, unfortunately, on staying here. Otherwise, he wouldn't have said that. But, it's nice to hear honesty from that, and it shows you behind the scenes, because it does show that. And again, I mean, he obviously targets Matt, because Matt Southall was the person in the building. I mean, Tanun Namir not providing funds means we weren't obviously able to offer big contracts anyway. But you know, it shows as a whole how ESI's takeover has affected the players within the club as well.
Cool, yeah, I bet. I mean, with someone like Lyle, as Lewis was just saying there, since he's come back from his injuries, his goals have really given us a bit of hope to stay up. I mean, that goal against Luton was brilliant, played well against Barnsley. For a player like him as well, it must be so frustrating, him looking at the January transfer window and thinking, right, here we go, we've got new owners in, some new funds coming in, we'll be able to put together more of a team, obviously losing Connor, that can kind of get us out of the mess we were going into. And that, just a growing sense of frustration then, looking around and seeing players not come in and not spending any money. I don't know if the players knew that we were under an embargo or not. So, yeah, real frustration for them. So, yeah, it's good to hear Lyle come out and speak out and actually give us some views from the players that we obviously didn't know at the time. We were all kept quiet, weren't we, from letting us know we were under an embargo, and hearing these players' frustrations come out. With Lyle, look, he's got nothing to lose. Obviously, there's always two sides to every story, but from what we've heard about ESI, it doesn't surprise us at all. Mm. And as he rightly put, it's the fans that lose out. We lose out from missing them, seeing a great player like Lyle play for our club. And we miss these kind of players and the kind of proper way to run a football club. It just doesn't work for us, does it?
Yeah. Terry, I mean, if you got anything to add on this situation, it was a revealing interview from Lyle Taylor. Again, we were talking about how it shows it's difficult for the club. I don't know if I just want this segment to end. If you've got anything to say that could give me some hope, because I sit in my office all week doing my day job, and you're thinking, oh, I wish I could go and watch the football at the weekend, and that will cheer me up. But at the moment, I'm not getting any football to watch at the weekend, and we've still got this absolute circus going on off the pitch, and it's just making me miserable now.
Yeah, I know, and I think you echo the sentiments of pretty much every Charlton fan out there. Can I give you hope? Probably not. I mean, the only straw I can clutch at is that, you know, Lyle has always come across well-spoken and always gives, speaks from the heart as well as the gut and his brains. And what it did show, I think, during the interview was that despite the contract nonsense that he was going through, he still gave it his all on the pitch for us. Still scored goals for us, and so and I think there is a genuine concern for our club from him, and he genuinely likes the club. So as much as we don't expect to see him again, at least that under the management regime we've got, that players are willing to give their all regardless. So if there is any straw to clutch at, is that as long as we have the management team and a semblance of the playing staff going forward, then we should be alright.
Yeah, well, hopefully, but we'll see. Right, we're going to have a quick break here on Charlton Live. As I promised, when we come back, we're going to relive last year's playoff semi-finals.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers with a header. And it's shot.
Yes!
It's
in!
Oh, he scores! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it all!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero! Here at Wembley! Oh my word! Oh my word!
Charlton Live.
Right, so welcome back to Charlton Live. As I promised there just before the advert break, we've got to look back at last year's playoff semi-finals. I mean, the anniversary of the first leg passed earlier on this week, and the second leg will be early next week. So I thought we've got to look back at it because, obviously the final gets all the majority of the plaudits because it's one of those unforgettable moments. But the playoff semi-finals last year were the first one was actually probably one of our better performances of the season. And a great weekend. The second one, one of the most enthralling games of football I've ever been at. Heart-wrenching at times, terrifying the majority of the time, but ultimately ended up quite sweet as well. So first of all, let's take ourselves back then to this time last year, Lewis. Let's say it's the final day of the season. We've just beaten, was it Rochdale? We beat 4-0.
Beat them
4-0, made that jump into third place on the final day, and we found out then that we were getting Doncaster when for a while we suspected we'd be getting either Portsmouth or Sunderland in the playoff semi-final. All of a sudden you're getting Doncaster, who finished quite a fair distance behind us in the league. We'd beaten them at home, had a draw away from home where we got away with a disallowed goal in the last minute actually as well. But, you know, we'd had some tight games with them. But obviously in terms of the teams in the playoffs, you'd have to say on paper they were the weakest going into that playoff competition. So, I mean, can you remember how you felt, the fact that we were playing Doncaster rather than Sunderland or Portsmouth in the semi-finals?
Yeah, I do. I remember the lead up to it, I was thinking, I just know that we're going to get Sunderland over two legs, and that they were the team that I sort of didn't fancy the most. I mean, even though they'd been a little bit inconsistent that second half of the season, I just didn't fancy taking on Sunderland over two legs. Portsmouth, I thought we probably could have just shaved past them because our performances against them away from home, especially over the past two seasons, were very impressive. But to get Doncaster was pretty much the dream tie out of the lot. And obviously the performance on that final day to get us up into third, I don't think any of us really imagined that we'd have been there, because I think at the start of the day we were fifth, maybe potentially. I think we were fifth at the start of the day. And I just remember getting that, and I had a lot of optimism about it. I was quite nervous. I remember because we all sort of stayed in the same hotel, didn't we? We had like a big group of us up there for the weekend. And I remember the night before we all met up and went to the pub, and I was kind of feeling more optimistic than I was nervous, which was good, because I think the lead up to it, I was sort of a little bit nervous, worried that we would sort of bottle it. But the night before, sort of talking about how good our performances had been over that, especially the second half of the season. I think we only lost twice, didn't we, at Fleetwood, and we lost at Oxford on Good Friday. I was just optimistic, and we were fantastic on the day. And that first half, it was so loud in that away end at the Keep Moat. I think that it's probably the loudest away atmosphere I've ever heard in the league. You obviously take Wembley out of it. And it was just a special day, a fantastic day. And I just remember coming out of that feeling like we pretty much had one foot at Wembley, because I just thought that we played Doncaster off the park. And then obviously the second leg came about and it was a little bit more nervy.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ben, we're talking mainly about the first leg at the moment. But I mean, obviously we hadn't seen the likes of Johnny Williams for a few weeks at that time. And I think probably the biggest team news at the time was that Igor Vetekele was out injured. Oh, just knocked my microphone there, because you know, it meant we were relying on Josh Parker to go up alongside Lyle Taylor. So I guess that was the only disappointment going into the semi-finals. I mean, can you remember how confident you felt going into that two-legged tie?
I was quite confident. I think looking at the seasons before where we've got in the playoffs, the Shrewsbury playoff tie. I know we had the first leg at home there, didn't we? And I didn't feel as confident then as I did this year round. I think as a team, I mean, the likes of Bauer, Aribo, Bellick, the players obviously we've not had this year. Bellick scored a great goal against Rochdale. These players were in form. And as you say, we were missing Igor, but Parker, got to give it to the guy, as much as he didn't score any goals, he gave it 100%, and I really think he matched with Taylor quite well. His work rate really helped Taylor out, and yeah, I was going into it feeling confident. I mean, that day fond memories of that day. It was a beautiful day as well, wasn't it? The sun was shining, as Lewis said. The atmosphere was brilliant. There were so many of us fans out there that day. I was quite disappointed with Doncaster's turnout, actually. I've got a mate of mine is a Charlton fan who lives in Doncaster, and he even said that he thought their turnout was quite poor that day. But first half was brilliant, wasn't it? We played some great football, scored 2 goals in 2 minutes, and really put us in the ascendancy. And their goal was a little bit lucky, wasn't it? It looped up and he headed it in at the far post. But overall, it was a great performance and one that really set us into the second leg looking good.
Yeah. And Terry, then just before we hear the highlights of that first leg then, and Lewis sort of mentioned it, I mean, we had a load of us up in Doncaster on the night before the game. It feels like such a long time ago now that we're not even allowed to go outside the house and see each other. But it's nights like that that, so much, you know, football, so much more than just the game itself, which obviously was a great occasion. But to have so many Charlton fans take over a town up north, have a night out, everyone excited for the playoffs. I mean, it really was one of those occasions that you just wish you could relive again.
No, that's a fact. It was a cracking weekend, as it turned out. I mean, I'm a bit different to the boys. I was cacking myself. I wasn't confident at all. I think I'd have been slightly less worried had we not been sort of tagged as favourites, because, you know, we finished third. As you said earlier, we'd beaten Doncaster at home, got a point off from away from home. And then the FA Cup game was in the railroads because we put a second string side out. So most people, I think, were expecting us to win. So that always bothers me a bit. So I was a bag of nerves. I don't mind confessing. Second one more so than the first.
Yeah.
In the build up, because I think if we can come out of here with a draw or sneak a 1-goal win, that'll do us and we'll bring it back to the valley.
Okay, so let's have a listen then to the highlights of that first leg. The commentators back in the olden days when we were allowed outside, of course, with Terry and Greg over on Valley Pass.
Cullen drills it in towards the far post. It's headed away by Butler, only as far as Wilkes, who flicks it on out left. It might come the way of Morgan. Will he decide to keep it on? He has. Morgan onto his right foot. Morgan still with it. Cross into the box. It's a deep one. Cause there's a flick. Comes to Cullen. Ball across. Goal. It's come off.
Yeah! No!
Can't make it 1-0. Lord Taylor, the man, score after 31 minutes. Josh Cullen with superb play on the right side to keep it in. The ball across goal. It took a couple of deflections. And finally, Lyle Taylor with the diving header. And Joel making 1-0 the keep moat.
Every single Doncaster player is screaming for an offside there. Firstly, for Josh Cullen, who was at the far side. But I think Doncaster player had two players on the line. Josh Cullen then drilled it across. Taylor got a touch, I think. Took another deflection before it spun back up off the keeper and into Tyler's head.
Cullen looking for the out ball towards Taylor, and that's a lovely ball. Taylor, good control, cuts inside onto his left foot. Taylor still with it. Oh, it's a bit of a loose touch. It comes away with Morgan. Morgan thinking about a shot onto his right foot. Ball across goal comes to Taylor. Taylor, he uses Aribo down the line. Aribo, ball across goal.
Yes!
Joe Aribo on the right-hand side. Lovely pass from Lyle Taylor down the line. And Joe have shell-shocked the host here as Joe Aribo scores for the Addicts.
And I think you've got to go back to the ball from Josh Cullen. Firstly, the head away from Patrick Bale was quality. But when Josh Cullen picked it up in midfield, the ball out to Lyle Taylor was absolutely exquisite. We get lucky with the interception that took it out to Albie Morgan. He found Lyle Taylor, teed up Joe Aribo, who just, well, Morosi will be a little disappointed. He just hit it across the six-yard box. And Morosi fluffed his lines and Charlton tuned it up.
Charlton fans in Dreamland in the away stands, nearly 4,000 of them bouncing the place up and down.
Out to Andrew, now Malik Wilkes, who swaps sides momentarily. Cuts inside, but that's well covered by Billick, but it'll run through to Marquis. Goes backwards to Andrew. Ball down the line to Wilkes. Wilkes, Cullen gets something on it, it goes across, and it's headed in by Blair, and Doncaster have a goal back.
Yeah, they're very, very fortunate that Wilkes' cross took a deflection. It's headed on by Blair on the line. That doesn't take a deflection. That's never going to be a goal. A little bit of a wake-up call, though, for Charlton. I think Charlton have been quite comfortable in possession. We spoke about it, maybe having a bit more ambition. And Doncaster have a way back in this tie. Charlton still have the advantage. No need to panic. You know, we're taking a 1-0, no any day of the week. So just need to keep ourselves calm. The away fans still singing.
Taylor, holding it by the corner flag. And here is the final whistle. It's finished here with Charlton a 2-1 victory.
So there we go. That brings back good memories of that first leg tie up at Doncaster. I guess that goal right at the very end, Lewis, it just made it a little bit less comfortable, wasn't it, going into the return leg at the Valley? Because I remember maybe about 2 minutes before Doncaster got that goal back, we had a huge chance to make it 3-0 when it crossed from the right-hand side, just floated over the head of Lyle Taylor. I remember on the train home, you know, being reasonably pleased, but just thinking, oh, it could have been done and dusted if that had gone in instead of Doncaster getting that lucky one back.
Yeah, definitely. It was one of those, and it was sort of typical. Just like, it's the Charlton way, as we've always said. You can't go back to the Valley with a 2-goal lead. That's absolute nonsense. They've got to keep us on our toes, haven't they? That's how we do it always. But yeah, it was you know, ever so slightly frustrating. But I just remember being so on top of the world after, you know, just because we're not really always. I just think that from the year before, the sort of experience of going up to Shrewsbury, obviously taking that 1-goal defeat up there, and thinking, oh, could we turn this around? I never felt confident with that. And to have sort of the team last year, there was something special about that team last year, just the fight and everything, and they gave 100% every game. And I just felt like it was maybe our turn. So not even to win the thing, but just to get to Wembley. And I just remember sort of thinking, regardless of that goal, just literally just being absolutely elated. I was bouncing around. I was with a couple of my mates. We were just all jumping around, hugging each other and stuff like that, because it was just an amazing day. And I think the sort of the highs of the entire weekend carried all the way through to the final whistle. You know, the fact we all went up there together and was drinking the night before and that, celebrating not just the playoffs, but a fantastic season all in all. I think it was just that sort of positivity carried us all the way through that tie, and, you know, took us back to the Valley with that 2-1 lead.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, that's what we need to remember about that performance. Actually, when especially when you think about it, you compare it to the nervous performance we had in the second leg, Ben. But we actually played some lovely stuff, and particularly in that first half. I mean, we could have been 3 or 4 up going into the break, and we had a couple more chances after it. And Doncaster only really came back into that game in like the closing stages.
Yeah, as we said, I think the Shrewsbury game before, we just didn't turn up, did we, in that playoff? So. Why we went so mad in that first half. We were like, we're 2-0 up here in the first half of the first leg of the playoffs, and we're playing such good football that, look, here we go. We're on our way to the final. And I think we had that confidence from the games previous, where from nowhere we kind of made it to third. And, yeah, as you said, we went in favourites as well. And, like, we were playing up to that tag of favourites. Like, we were playing some beautiful football. As Terry said in commentary there, that lovely ball from Josh Cullen, him and Bellick and Aribo, Taylor and Jigsteel down that right side had a good link together. It was just all working so well that even when they scored that late goal, we all still celebrated at the end. And I know Taylor kept the ball down by the corner flag near our fans, and we all kind of celebrated and thought, you know what, here we go now. I think we're going to get to the final. And, well, as we will go on to discuss in the second leg, we took the lead early there. But it just really felt like this could be it. Like, after 2 years of getting in the playoffs, we felt quite confident that this team can go on to take us up.
I mean, how did you feel then, Terry, going into the next leg then? Because again, like I say, just at the very back of my mind, you know, that last goal, and I remember the build up to the build up to that Friday night. I mean, that day at work just went on forever. I mean, it was the longest day ever, and the nerves were too much to take. I mean, I just want to know how you're feeling, and then once you told us how you're feeling, then we'll listen back to the second leg highlights.
Well, this is mad because I'm feeling nervous again. It must be me. It's got to be me because, and maybe it's just because I'm old and I've been through it a few times. I don't know, but I had huge relief after the first leg. I'm a huge relief, even though they did score that in the last minute goal. Because you think, well, we play like that, you know, and there's nobody can touch us actually in any of those teams that were vying for to go up. If we play as well as we did in the first half hour, 40 minutes. through this process. Nobody should be able to touch us, but you know, it's just those sort of things don't happen. And I remember actually when we got to the valley eventually, and I was still nervous. I was absolutely cackled. I was a bag of nerves. And everybody's saying to me, "Well, you know, it's all right. We score first; it's game over. You know, there's no way they're coming back from a 2-goal deficit, not the way we've been playing." And I'm still going, "This is Charlton, you know." And I think, was it Phil Parry you were commentating with on BBC? Louis.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I remember saying to him because, and he said pretty much the same thing. And I just went, "This is Charlton. This is Charlton. Don't predict stuff like that because it don't pan out like that. Not the way our history dictates otherwise. It just doesn't." And then I remember at half time in that second leg, I looked across to him and went, "Told you."
So here we go then. Let's have a listen back to the highlights. Just to set the scene though. So of course we were I've done the microphone fail again. We were 2-1 up from the first leg. This is a Charlton team that had won their last 6 games at home consecutively. They hadn't actually lost a game at home in the last 16 in the league. An undefeated run at home that went all the way from May, we were in at that point, back to October when they'd beaten at Coventry. They'd beaten Doncaster at home in the earlier on in the season. Of course, they beat Doncaster in the first leg. So absolutely everything was pointing towards a comfortable home win. Not quite how it played out.
Cullen goes on a run. Aribo just stalls. The run is at a decoy. Cullen now knocks it in. Billiquid header! Yeah! 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 Mr. Billiquid puts Charlton in front of the tie! And 3-1 up in the... on aggregate. What a perfect start. It was a little decoy run from Josh Cullen. Doncaster fell for it. A dink ball to the edge of the 6-yard box. Christian Billiquid got there first. And Marco Morosi had no chance in keeping it out.
Well, that's the start Charlton wanted. A superb training ground drill. Credit to the coaching staff for that one. We saw that Aribo was never going to take that. Cullen with a decoy, came back, chipped it in. Doncaster was slow to react. And Christian Billiquid, the Arsenal loanee, rose highest and heads home for the Addicts. What a start. The atmosphere is electric. This place is bouncing.
Downing for Doncaster in the centre circle. On the plus side, Charlton 1-0 up. Slightly negative as we've got another 80 minutes. Oh, a breakaway as Doncaster break and they score! Tommy Rowe in the penalty area. Charlton fall asleep, give the ball away. And it's 1-1 on the night.
The corner comes in, it's a deep one.
Bauer beaten to it, it's a goal! Butler beats Bauer to the ball and heads it in. 2-1 2-1 on the night, 3-3.
It's just a simple corner to the back post. Butler getting ahead of Bauer. Just a simple knockdown. And Doncaster level.
And there is the final whistle. And it's finished 2-1 here at full time. 3-3 on aggregate in the time. We go to extra time. And Doncaster can break away with May. May's got Wilkes to his right. Wilkes towards the corner of the penalty area. Nabisar across, trying to stop him getting on his left. Cuts across with his right. It's a free header! And Doncaster take the lead with Marquis.
They just totally switched off the Addicts.
Restart. Williams, oh, he's taken out again. This time. I want to see who that was, actually. But Charlton take it quickly anyway. It doesn't matter. It's out to Dick Still. Dick Still down the line into Taylor. Taylor. Goes past his man, ball into the box, oh, it's squared across, yes! On the end to squeeze it into the net, Charlton back on level terms, within a minute.
That's the perfect response, we go again, Darren Bradley just nudging the ball home. I talked about the balls in the box, not quite finding a man, that one did. I told you this game wasn't over. It's far from over.
One last launch forward, perhaps. No. Chips it towards... No, there is the final whistle. We're in the penalties. Chris Solick has the honour. Morosi taking his time to get back. Trying to play as many mind games as he can. Chris Solick steps forward. Strikes it into the left hand corner. Charlton is the first one.
There's your captain. Dispatch
Keeper dived to his right, Solly the other way. Now for Dylan Phillips to try and step up for Charlton Whiteman to take.
Whiteman into the roof of the net. It's 1-0. He does the old finger on his lips nonsense.
Yeah, good penalty. Very, very good penalty. The way he ran up to the ball as well, he just ran up straight away. Dispatched. Phillips had no chance. Josh Cullen's turn.
Josh Cullen strides forward, shoots it left, and oh,
come on,
dribbles into the right hand corner from Charlton. 2-1.
Sigh of relief there for Josh Cullen, blows his cheeks, but I think he was waiting for the goalkeeper to move, so it didn't matter how he caught in the end. Well done, Josh.
Sadly up for Doncaster.
He doesn't look confident here, Sadler. He looks nervous.
Takes it all just over Dylan Phillips' outstretched arm and into the right-hand corner.
Again, he just hit that very, very well. Nowhere near Dylan Phillips.
Lyle Taylor strides forward. Two all on penalties. Morosi taking his time again. Val Taylor with that slow build-up. Takes it into the bottom right-hand corner. Again, Charlton have the lead.
Confidence that from Lowe. I thought he might change his run-up. Keeper didn't really move, which made it even difficult for him. That slow run-up that he does, he waits for the keeper to move. And he did in the end. And now it's Crawford for Doncaster. The third penalty of Doncaster.
Oh, into the roof of the net. To the left of Dylan Phillips. All square again.
Fair play to Doncaster. Their three penalties have been outstanding. Rebo's turn.
Joe Rebo. Three all. Steps forward. Takes it, calmly places it into the left side of the keeper, to his right. Charlton are back in front again.
Well done, Joe. There's someone who'll probably be playing at a high level one day and might have to play in a penalty shootout in a high division. That'll give him good experience.
This is hopefully a huge penalty. It's marquee for Doncaster. He steps forward.
And yes!
The save down!
Come on! Come on!
Phillips!
Come on! His
left-hand side and blocked the marquee penalty. And Nabi Sarr will stride forward. And can he put Charlton in the playoff final? Nabi Sarr to take the fifth penalty. Marquee got booked in the process. Nabi Sarr steps forward. And he's safe. Can this get any worse?
Oh, the emotions. Dylan saves this though.
It's Rowe for Doncaster. He steps forward. And he
misses!
And Charlton are in the Wembley final! I don't believe it! In the most astonishing method possible. Rowe, who scored the first goal for Doncaster, has missed the penalty and sends Charlton through to the playoff final against Sunderland. Fans are on the pitch. The emotions are so, so high. And we're there. Oh, we're there.
Absolutely spine tingling to hear that again. It brings back so many fond memories of that, the aftermath of that penalty shootout, the tears were in the eyes, the fans were on the pitch. It really was an incredible night, but it was, Lewis, one of the worst nights of my entire life, as well as being one of the best, because after we got that early goal, you thought, excellent, we're there. You know, I mentioned that unbeaten run we had at home, that winning run we were on at the Valley. And then after that, we just completely fell apart and put in one of our worst performances of the season. It was bizarre.
Yeah, it was one of those, wasn't it, where it was like the occasion definitely got to them a little bit. I mean, that early goal, I was thinking, because before the game, I was so nervous before this game. It was the complete opposite to the first leg. And I just, after getting that early goal, I just remember relaxing instantly. But then, as you say, we just sort of, the wheels came off a little bit, didn't they? Because Donny scored sort of immediately afterwards, didn't they, through Tommy Rowe. And then it was sort of nervy throughout the whole game. And they nearly scored sort of before the end. And then obviously that goal right at the death. I felt like that went in slow motion, because I just remember him beating Bauer to the header. And I just felt like the whole ground went silent. I just remember myself like screaming like no for about 10 seconds. And then the ball hit in the back of the net. And I was absolutely distraught. And I'd travelled down. I'd left my friend's wedding down in Bath for like for the game. And I was just like, it was horrendous. My heart completely sank. And then obviously with the Marquise goal in extra time as well. Like, it was just, I think you probably felt every emotion that day as a Charlton fan, didn't you? And I think, as you mentioned earlier, like even the build up before the game, it was probably the slowest day I've had ever in history. Like, just waiting for kickoff. But yeah, listening back to it, it was incredible, wasn't it? It's a proper Charlton thing, despite the stress and the emotion of it. It's like a proper Charlton result, that, and it was just, yeah, incredible. It makes you kind of a little bit sad listening to it now, because what we mentioned earlier on in the show about how we're all sort of, you know, completely, we're all just nervous about what the future of our club holds. And you think only 12 months ago were we probably at our highest for a long time, and probably the highest we have been for a lot of Charlton fans of a certain generation. So it just makes this whole takeover and Tanoon and Matt saga even more frustrating when you hear just how amazing things were literally 12 months ago. Mm.
It's funny now, Benji, when I think about it, about the similarities perhaps to the second leg we had against Swindon in 2010. Under Phil Parkinson, obviously, there were some differences. I mean, we came into the game a goal behind. But in terms of similarities, it's like we started off against Swindon really well. We got that two-goal lead. They went down to 10 men. You're thinking, oh, brilliant. And then all of a sudden it turns. And that night we had, against Swindon, we had chances to go through. This night, once it turned, I mean, there was at no point after Doncaster, you know, I'd say even after they equalised on the night, I mean, they really started to turn it on in that second half and, you know, eventually got the goal that took it into extra time. But at no point during that game did I realistically think we were going to go through, other than the first sort of 10 minutes or so, because we were so nervous and we were on the back foot. And I just thought, there's no chance we can win this. We've blown it. We've blown this good performance that we put in the first leg.
Oh, yeah, spot on. I think it was such a roller coaster of emotions, wasn't it? And it actually really typifies being a Charlton fan. As you say, similar to other playoff games that we've had before, where you kind of, when Bellick did score, he feel, hang on, this is a bit too good to be true. I mean, I've seen a few of the videos that fans took when we scored at Bellick goal, and the atmosphere is just, oh, the Valley is rocking. I think everyone always talks about the best atmosphere at the Valley being the 98 playoff semi-final against Ipswich when Newton scored that wonder goal. And I remember that as a kid thinking, wow, the atmosphere is amazing. But I think that maybe topped it at the start of that game. Everyone was singing Valley Floyd Road and Cullen puts in that beautiful ball with 1-0 up. And yeah, it did seem like too good to be true. And oh, you look at the defending for the Rowe goal and Marquise. Our defending just went to pot, didn't it? I mean, Rowe's goal, he just runs through the middle of the pitch and just no one goes near him and he shoots and scores. And Marquise's goal, he's unmarked at the back post. And Phillips kind of looks and goes, you're joking, where's everyone gone? Mm. He's just had an open goal. Mm. It's just crazy. But yeah, just I guess the nerves just got to the players. And well, thank goodness we stepped up to take it to penalties because, yeah, felt so deflated. And I agree with you that not after the first 10 minutes and Rowe equalising on the night, I'd never thought we were going to go through. Mm. So The elation when he did miss the penalty was, I mean, again, half the ground didn't realise that we were through.
Yeah, I remember that on social media the next day, quite a lot of people admitting that they had no idea. Terry, I mean, we have to remember, I guess, the one point where the game really threatened to get away from us, of course, was when Marquis put Doncaster into the lead on the tie in extra time. And it is that vital goal from the man who probably was our man of the playoffs, Darren Prattley. You know, it was 20 seconds after the restart and he hauled us back into it. And that celebration with his shirt ripped and his running, you know, just sort of personified everything that he'd done for us, in those playoffs, because he really came into his own and he scored a goal at such a vital time. Because I think even if we'd gone even 2 or 3 minutes being behind in the tie, I do wonder if that could have taken it all out of the players.
I'd agree 100%, and you're right to lord up the legend that is Prattley, because I mean, what an intervention. I mean, there are a few things on this. I mean, the first is that everybody's talking about the similarities with who we eventually got in the final and the fact that the last time we played them in a playoff final. Actually, that second semi-final at the Valley was so much, for me anyway, similar to the last Sunderland playoff final where, you know, we went into that last Sunderland playoff with a superb defensive record. Everybody's saying, we score first, then, you know we should be able to hold out because we're so fantastic at it. And we can, of course, we come into the Valley unbeaten, what, in six at... hadn't conceded a goal and all this, more than one goal anyway. And then we take the lead against Doncaster and people are thinking, well, that's it, done and dusted. And we're home and dry. But this is Joel. We don't do stuff like that. And as the boys have so eloquently said, we just went missing. Although I'm a little bit different. I didn't actually think Doncaster, I mean, I know that their manager said they outplayed us. I'm not entirely sure that's true. I think they certainly controlled the game better than we did, and we kept giving the ball to them at alarmingly frequent times. But I never really felt that, that Rowe scoring was a body blow. But even then, when you consider that was, what, after 10 minutes, I think it was, we went another 70 before they actually scored. And I didn't really think they were that threatening. But, Charlton being Charlton, you're talking about the defending for the Rowe goal, and then... Pat Bower decides to win a free kick rather than actually win the header in the last minute and allows Butler to equalise. And then when Marquis scored that goal and he was all alone in the six-yard box, he's thinking, that's it. You know, I didn't see any way back from that. But for Prattley to get that goal straight after, within a minute. And I didn't realise until this is absolutely true, I've only actually watched that back about 3 days ago. I wanted to watch it in exactly the same timeline a year later, so I watched the first leg on the day of the first leg, and then I was going to wait and watch the second leg, but I couldn't. So I watched it within a day, and I didn't realise at the time or subsequently for until I've just watched it back that Morosi slipped just before the ball got to him. Now, I didn't realise that. I mean, how vital is that? Because if he doesn't slip, he gets the ball, comfortably gets the ball, but his leg just gives way underneath him. And so he can only get one hand to it, and it just diverts into the path of Prattley.
Yeah,
so, I mean, these so fine margins.
Yeah, so it's the luck you need in the playoffs. And obviously, I mean, we took advantage of it. I mean, Ben, what was your thoughts going into the penalty shootout? Because obviously we knew we had a good goalkeeper in Dylan Phillips. We knew we had a good penalty taker in Lyle Taylor. Not too many, I suspect, thought that Chris Solly was going to be the man to take the first one.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I was just so nervous at that point. I think when Prattley scored, I literally just showed no emotion. I stood there and thought, what? We're back in it now. Like, this seems a bit weird. I thought we were done then. And then, yeah, when it got through to the penalties, just pure nerves. And then when you see Chris Solly, our right back, step up to take the penalty, you figured, oh, hang on a sec. But I preferred us going first. Wasn't there some weird thing where the penalties were supposed to be down the Doncaster end, but the police said no? And
well, yeah, normally it would be a toss of the coin, but the police came in and said no, due to safety reasons, it had to be at the covered end, which Doncaster weren't happy about after, but...
Yeah, I think a few of their fans were impeaching the segregation, weren't they? So they took it down the other end. But, yeah, I think the little positives I was taking was, OK, we're going first. I personally prefer that. And then down the covered end, so we got extra support, give their keeper a bit of jip and that. But the first lot of penalties were all really good, weren't they, until Marquise missed. But, yeah, oh, just pure. When you go back to that night, you just think that night for me was more exciting. Well, was just better than the playoff final. I just look back on that night and the pure roller coaster of it, going on the pitch. I mean, when as Charlton fans, except when we're protesting, get to go on the pitch in celebration. You watch so many teams do that. And for us to do it was just, it was just such an amazing night.
Yeah, and Lewis, what about that moment then? So we've seen Marquise make the save from... Dylan Phillips, sorry, make the save from John Marquise, the former Millwall striker, we should remember. And then Naby Sarr steps up to send us to Wembley and his glorious redemption, although it didn't quite go to plan.
it was an opportunity to be forever written into Charlton folklore, wasn't it? Naby Sarr, bless him. And I think when he steps up, you know, it's been said many a time by Bowyer that he's one of the best finishers at the club. So I was actually quietly confident when Naby was stepping up, because we've seen him do it before. You know, we've seen him score free kicks. We've seen him score a bundle of different goals. And when he stepped up for that, I was fairly confident. And I probably wasn't a player on that pitch. I was more desperate to score the winning penalty than Naby Sarr, because it would have just been... He'd had a very good season anyway. I think, you know, he was runner-up player of the year. More than deservedly so. You know, we spoke to him at Player of the Year, and the sort of, you could see how much it meant to him, like this sort of redemption that he had. And I was just desperate for him to put that away. And, you know, it wasn't to be. And it was one of those, wasn't it, like heart in mouth moments. And it was sort of just as well that the Tommy Rowe penalty afterwards was straight wide. I remember I'd watching it sort of through the creases of your fingers because you're so nervous. And when it missed, you know, like Benji said earlier, I couldn't quite believe that it was done with and that we were through. And I think that it was probably 40-50% of the valley were in the same boat. I think it was just the pure disbelief that we'd actually done it after such a roller coaster of a game. And it's just one of those things. I think after this, I'm going to have to go and rewatch the whole thing again, because it's just incredible. And what an amazing, amazing game to be a part of. And to be there live and with the Valley packed out, not just in the home ends, but half the Jimmy Seed as well. It was really, really special. And those scenes at the end will be something I'll remember for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and Terry, we could hear in the commentary there that you were certainly swept up in the emotion of the event at the end.
You could say that. Yeah, I was choked. I only found out afterwards. The Naby Sarr, as Lewis said, cited as being one of the best strikers of the ball in the club and best finishers. And it wasn't until afterwards I said, well, every penalty he takes in training, every time he steps up in practice or even mucking about, he drills it. He drills it normally straight down the middle, and nobody can get anywhere near it. Even if you stand your ground, you're gonna hurt your fingers. He just hits it so hard. He steps up and does completely the opposite. And so you just can't write the script, can you? And I was with Lewis. I mean, when Rowe missed, and he did hit it hard, and it took me a second to realise that he'd actually missed, because I thought he scored that into the top right-hand corner or wherever it went. It was only, you know, it seemed like ages. It obviously was only a split second that he realised he'd missed. But then I'm thinking, and I think I said it on commentary, I don't know whether it was cut out, but I'm pretty sure I said on commentary, there, you know, everybody's on the pitch, why? You know, we haven't finished. Of course we had. Didn't grasp that, of course, that Marquis had missed one just before, so therefore that was it, we were in. And I agree that, again, with Lewis, that, you know, it was rocking, and I was lucky to be at the Ipswich playoff semi-final, and that was the loudest I'd known the valley, and I was in the East End then, and the East End was literally moving with the amount of people jumping up and down and singing. The whole crowd was singing, and I think this was up there with that, definitely up there with that, and I just cracked, because, you know, you want to, one of the things you always want for your club, you want them to be as successful as they can be. At the moment, all we want is survival, obviously, as a club, but, you know, to go to Wembley and to see your club at Wembley is one of the pinnacles, and to get to do it twice, and albeit now a new Wembley, is just special, and to get it there in the manner we did, the voice went, as you probably told.
Yeah, well, I look forward to us reminiscing about that final on Charlton Live next week, but we're going to leave it here then. So we've looked back at last year's playoff semi-finals, both legs against Doncaster Rovers. That's cheered me up a little bit, at least. I hope that's cheered you guys up as well. So that's the end of this week's podcast. Like I say, we'll be back next week to look back at 1 year on from that amazing playoff final against Sunderland at Wembley. But thank you for listening this week. Thank you to Terry, to Lewis and to Benji for joining us on the pod this week.
Cheers, Louis. Thanks, everyone. Cheers, boys.
And we shall see you all again next week. I've been Louis Mendes. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.